I'm Savannah Hutka with Hutka Farms in Westphalia, Texas. You're listening to the latest news in Texas agriculture on Texas Ag Today.
This is Texas Ag Today, the number one source for the latest news in Texas agriculture. The largest and most experienced farm news team in the Lone Star State covers it all. From the piney woods of East Texas to the rocky ranges of the Trans-Pecos, and from the Panhandle down to the Rio Grande Valley. Here's today's top stories.
When weather forecasters in the Texas High Plains are trying to assess the potential for severe weather, a key issue is determining where the dry line is. I'm James Hunt, and coming up on Texas Ag Today, we'll talk about the role of the West Texas Mesonet in making that determination.
U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says we are focusing too much on our top four markets for agricultural exports. He discusses what the U.S. Department of Agriculture is doing to expand trade opportunities coming up on Texas Ag Today.
Water challenges for farmers growing crops in the Texas Rio Grande Valley. I'm Tom Nicoletti, and I'll have a conversation with one of those farmers from South Texas on Texas Ag Today.
Now, here's the host of Texas Ag Today, Kerry Martin.
Hello, Texas. Why don't you jump on in with me and buckle up? We're going to take a ride around the Lone Star State as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the nation, Texas agriculture. Be sure to hold on tight because it all starts right now. Veterinary officials are not putting mandatory quarantines around dairies to prevent the spread of highly pathogenic avian influenza that was initially found in dairy cows here in Texas. Dr. Rosemary Sifford with USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service says there's no plans to depopulate cattle herds with confirmed infections.
So far, it appears that the cattle are able to recover after a couple of weeks, go back into the milking herd. And so at this point, we do not expect to need to depopulate cattle.
She says animal disease experts are collecting a massive amount of data on the outbreak.
It is really important at this time for us to receive information about these herds and receive samples from these herds so that we can get a more clear picture of exactly what's going on. And so we have epidemiologists who are working with producers to gather up information, and we're working with our state animal health officials to get samples into the lab for testing. All of that information helps us to understand much more clearly what role high path avian influenza is playing in this overall illness in dairy cattle and what we can do to more effectively prevent it in the future.
The disease has been found in 7 dairy herds here in Texas, 3 in Kansas, 2 in New Mexico, and 1 each in Ohio, Idaho, and Michigan. There's more corn in storage right now than at this time last year.
According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Grain Stocks Report, there was 8.35 billion bushels of corn in all positions March 1st, 13% higher than the same time in 2023. Of those, 5.08 billion bushels were in on-farm storage. That's up 24%. Off-farm stocks were down 1%. USDA reports there are 9% more soybeans in storage this year, totaling 1.85 billion bushels. On-farm soybean storage is up 24% from 2023 to 933 million bushels. Off-farm stocks were down 3%. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
Texas is losing a livestock sale barn. Lampasas Cattle Auction announced on social media last week that the barn's last sale will be in May. The Texas Department of Transportation is buying the facility to build an overpass and oversized load truck parking on the property. There will be an auction on May 25th to sell all of the barn's equipment. When weather forecasters in the Texas High Plains are trying to assess the potential for severe weather, a key issue is determining where the dry line is. James Hunt looks at the role the West Texas Mesonet has in making that determination.
As we head deeper into spring and severe weather season, where the dry line is will be a subject of interest for a lot of people in the Texas High Plains. The dry line, to put it in simple terms, is where dry air coming in from the west converges with moist air from the Gulf of Mexico. The operations manager for the West Texas Mesonet, Wes Burgett, says the dry line's location and its movement are critical in assessing storm potential.
On the west side, it'll be dry, warm, usually very windy. On the east side, it's more humid. There may be low clouds and everything else. The concern with dry lines is, does it retreat? Some of the most explosive development of storms is when that dry line will retreat westward at night, whether it's to Lubbock to Amarillo. If you get storms on that retreating dry line, it can be quite significantly large hail, potentially tornadoes.
And Burgett says determining precisely where the dry line is at any given time is one of the key services provided by the West Texas Mesonet, which has grown to 157 weather stations across the region.
The main benefit of the Mesonet over the years is to have a dense network of weather stations. So with a dry line, before the Mesonet started, you would have a weather observation at the Amarillo Airport, you would have one at Clovis, and you had one at Delhart. So you knew the dry line was somewhere between there, but you didn't know exactly where. Now, as radar technology has improved, you actually see what they call a fine line where the position is on radar sometimes. But with the Mesonet being a station approximately every 20, 25 miles, you know exactly the position of the dry line based on dew point and wind.
The West Texas Mesonet is operated by the National Wind Institute at Texas Tech University in Lubbock. I'm James Hunt on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says we're focusing too much on our top four markets for agricultural exports. Jessica Domel reports.
Agricultural trade is critical to our national economy and to family farms and ranches nationwide. And U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack recently discussed trade with the House and Senate Agriculture Committees, saying the U.S. Department of Agriculture is working to increase the U.S.'s presence in foreign markets.
It was mentioned by Representative Scott, the establishment of the Regional Ag Promotion Program, nearly $1 billion being invested at the request of Senator Stabenow and Senator Bozeman, bipartisan request to invest in trade, focusing on diversification of our market opportunity. We are over-reliant on our top four markets from an ag perspective, and so we want to put resources to increase our presence, our promotions, and our partnerships in a number of countries, particularly in Southeast Asia, number one. Number two, I think the focus people have when they define trade, they talk about in terms of trade agreements. I mean, the reality is you don't have trade promotion authority, so it's very difficult to imagine a trade agreement being negotiated when the people we're negotiating with realize that there are 535 folks who can negotiate again. So without trade promotion authority, that's the issue. So in the meantime, we're working on trying to reduce barriers. And I can tell you that roughly $21 billion of trade opportunities have been created or maintained as a result of wins looking at reducing trade barriers. The UK and wood pellets and biomass, Canada and a clean fuel regulation, Mexico and potato access, Japan, beef quota, higher blend ethanol availability, India, preservation of apples, expanded cherry access, the Philippines, expanded access to pork, China, almonds and almond hulls recently, Argentina, apples and pears, Israel, processed meat and eggs. There are a whole series of things that have occurred over the last 3 years. The cumulative impact and effect of them is to protect or to expand trade opportunities. So that's what we're up to. We're expanding trade missions and considering reverse trade missions where we bring people from other countries here in the U.S. So it's a combination of many things that don't necessarily get the headlines, but are particularly effective in terms of trade.
That was U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
Water challenges continue for farmers in the Rio Grande Valley. Tom Nicoletti checks in with a farmer facing those challenges in deep South Texas.
For today's program, we go to the Rio Grande Valley in the southernmost region of the state, and Michael Helley is my guest. He is a farmer in Hidalgo County, where he grows watermelons, honeydew, onions, also corn and peas. And Michael, certainly you, like a lot of farmers, are having challenges when it comes to having enough water for your crops. Tell us your current situation right now.
I'm one of the fortunate ones. I live here north of McAllen, north of Edinburgh, there's more houses and farmland, so I'm in better shape in this particular spot. That's where I had my onions and my watermelon because I had at least a year's supply of water. I've got another farm out in Hargill, Texas, which is northeast of Edinburgh. They gave us one irrigation, and so I planted peas out there because they use less water. We're going to just try to limp through that and make a crop of peas. And then north of me, it's another irrigation district, but it's in the same situation. There's more farmland than homes. It's not 5 miles north of me, but I've got 200 acres of land that I can only put 40 acres of watermelon on because that's all the water I have to produce irrigated. Balance of those acres will be dry land.
So how do you stand to make your crops when the water is very limited down there?
Well, we pick and chose what we wanted to grow. I'm pretty much 100% drip irrigation. So, you know, I can stretch my water versus the guy that's old school flood irrigation. So I got my corn in a district where I've got water, plenty of water. It's on drip irrigation. In spots where we didn't have enough water, we used the black-eyed peas. They don't take a lot of water like a cotton or corn does, nothing near that. So we're gambling on that to pull through. If we have a little bit of rain, they should be fine.
That is Rio Grande Valley farmer Michael Helley. I'm Tom Nicoletti with the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
A good timely rain is always welcome in the Central Texas Blackland region. This is Dr. Shane McClellan, and I'll have more from Waco.
And there are multiple devices to monitor human heart function, and some of those can be used on horses. Veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd has more on that coming up.
These stories plus a look at the markets are straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include but are not limited to livestock, feed, buildings, fences, and equipment. Additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications must be submitted by May 31st to your local county Farm Bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Keeping Texas farmers and ranchers informed for over two decades, this is Texas Ag Today on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
A good timely rain is always welcome in the Central Texas Blacklands. Dr. Shane McClellan has this update from Waco.
Corn, grain sorghum, wheat, and oats are all actively growing in the Central Texas Blackland region. We have had somewhat of a mild late winter and early spring weather. When our topsoil moisture has dried out, we've actually been receiving some nice rains here in Central Texas. Wheat is starting to head out in our area, and that means it's time for our annual Central Texas Small Grain Field Day. The Central Texas Small Grain Field Day this year will be on April 18th, starting at the Extension Hard Red Winter Wheat Variety Trial that's just located east of McGregor on Highway 84. At 8 a.m., Dr. Brandon Garish, who's an Extension Small Grain Specialist, is going to walk through those varieties and discuss their yield potential, disease and insect resistance, and their overall fit to the Central Texas growing environment. And we've had a lot of rust in our wheat this year, and that's one of the things that we'll be talking about is varieties that are resistant to rust. Mark Wells, an extension economist, will be speaking on the commodity markets and what factors drive those grain markets. A highlight of the program is going to be Yanni Mattson of Vortex Advantage Ag providing a grown demonstration. We have a lot of acres that are being covered and sprayed here in Central Texas with drones. They can go into an area, especially a populated area, by subdivision and go in and spray and get out before anyone even knows they're there. As always, we will have the steak tips for the noon lunch, courtesy of our many sponsors. A new part of the program is going to be a tour of the small grain research that is being conducted there at the AgriLife Research Center or McGregor. Hessian fly, fertility, there's some other studies on varieties. Cost to attend is going to be $10, and you can register for that small grain field day by calling the McLennan County Extension Office at 254-757-5180.
This is Dr. Shane McClellan reporting from Central Texas for Texas Ag Today.
There are multiple new devices to monitor human heart function. Dr. Bob Judd says some of these can also be used on horses.
Electrocardiograms, or ECGs, are commonly performed on equine hearts. ECGs have been performed on horses for years, but a group in Italy indicates in the horse publication that they have developed a jersey-like ECG monitor that straps on the horse's chest and detects cardiac rhythm using tiny electrodes woven into the garment's threads. At this point, the equipment is being used to determine the horse's emotional response and human-animal bonding work. There are commercial handheld devices that will record an ECG on a horse at rest, but lots of arrhythmias occur with exercise. And there is an ECG machine made in France that is somewhat accurate. Heart rate monitoring provides valuable feedback about recovery from exercise, as a detailed heart rate allows trainers to track the fitness and wellness of the horse and set up correct future training schedules. Heart rates vary considerably due to the training level and exercise type, so getting a baseline for your horse could be important if something changes. Heart rate variability is a measure of variation in time between each heartbeat, and changes can alert the user to changes in the autonomic nervous system that could indicate poor recovery from a previous exercise session. It is possible monitoring could identify horses with cardiac issues that could lead to more severe problems. Heart rate monitors can also give insight into any underlying disease processes, and since there are wireless systems, horses can be monitored from a distance. Heart rate also tells us about the horse's emotions and not just health, so the monitors can help determine the stressors of an individual horse.
I'm veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd. This is the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
We'll check the markets coming up next on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include, but are not limited to, livestock, feed, buildings, fences, and equipment. Unreimbursed additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications for assistance must be submitted by May 31st to a local county Farm Bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Sometimes you love them, sometimes you cuss them. Here's a look at the markets on Texas Ag Today.
Let's take a look back at how the markets wrapped up on Tuesday. Cattle futures headed higher. Triple-digit gains in both live and feeder cattle, with April live cattle up $1.30, 180.70. June up $1.52, 174.85. August up $1.65 at 172.55. Feeder cattle higher also. April up $1.40, 240.70. May feeders up $2.27, 239.45. The August contract up $1.85 at $2.50.10. Cash-fed cattle still quiet for the week. We only have a handful of sales, and I do mean a small handful. A couple hundred head reported in the Northern Plains, 186 to 186 and a quarter. Some lower quality heifers sold in Kansas at 182, but again, that's just a trickle. Nothing to set a market for the week. Right now, we see bids from the packers coming in at 180 to 182 here in the Southern Plains. Boxed beef was higher. Choice up 63 cents, 302.70. Select up $1.70, 301.97. Now let's check the auction barns. We're walking the pens with Larry Marble.
My guest is Rodney Butler. He's from Berclair, Texas, and he owns and operates Beeville Livestock. They sell every Friday. Rodney, how was your sale?
We had a good sale Friday. It might not have been as active as what it has been in the past, but I thought the good heavy cattle sold well. Maybe the lighter calves might have been a little softer. I'd say probably anywhere from four to six cents off on the calf market, sir.
Walk the pens with us.
All right, your 200, 300-pound steers were 312 to 390. Heifers, 260 to 350. Your 3 to 400-pound steers were 286 to 365. Heifers, 235 to $3. Your 400 to 500-pound steers were 254 to 300. A quarter. Heifers 222 to 282. 500 to 600 pound steers were 240 to 286. Heifers 218 to 325. 600 to 700 pound steers were 228 to 256. Heifers were 213 to 231. 700 to 800 pound steers were 218 to 254. And heifers were 206 to 216. Packer cows and bulls are pretty steady. They're pretty strong. They brought anywhere from $81 to $1.50. Bulls brought from $1.20 to $1.58. Stocker cows brought anywhere from $1.90 to $1.70 with some bred cows dollaring out around that $15.50. And we had a few pairs Friday. They brought anywhere from $1,100 to $1,800, sir.
Good. Are you aware of anything for this next week?
I know of a few cattle coming this next week, but not no big consignments that I know of, sir, right now.
Tell everybody how to get a hold of you, Rodney.
Yeah, if I can help market your cattle at a fair market in South Texas, call me at 361-358-1727. Or reach me on my mobile, 645-5002.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and take care.
You bet. Bye-bye. Neighbor, looks to me like that's it for today's edition of Walking the Pens on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network. My name's Larry Marble. That was Rodney Butler, Beeville Livestock, and you're our neighbor. Neighbor, we'll see you right back here Monday through Friday, Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network. Good day.
Thanks, Larry. Back over to the futures market. Now, lean hogs finished higher. April hogs up 85 cents, 90.60, with May hogs up 90, 98.77. Class 3 milk was lower. Nearby April contract down 12 cents, 15.55 a hundredweight, with May milk down 8, 16.67 a hundred. Both farmer and speculator selling, keeping a lid on cotton prices. We closed out lower with May cotton down 61 points, 86.04. July cotton down 55 at 87.84. New crop December cotton down 118 points, 81.36 cents. Corn closed lower. Traders keeping an eye on the Brazilian safrinha corn crop. It's off to a good start with more rain expected across central Brazil in the next 7 days. May corn down 4 1/4, 431 1/4. July corn down 5, 442 1/2, with September corn down 5 at 452 1/4. Wheat finished lower in both hard and soft wheat. USDA's latest crop ratings say that 56% of the nation's winter wheat crop is rated good to excellent. That is up from 27% at this same time a year ago. May Kansas City wheat down 8 cents, 577 1/4. July down 10 1/4 at 574 1/4. July Chicago wheat down 8 1/2, 572 a bushel. In the energy markets, May natural gas up 4 cents at $1.88. May West Texas crude down $1.14, 85.29 a barrel. The financial markets narrowly mixed, with the Dow down 44 points, 38,847. The NASDAQ up 28, 16,284. The S&P up 1 at 5,203. That wraps up our look at the markets, and that wraps up this episode of Texas Ag Today. I'm Kerry Martin. Hope to see you back here next time as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the U.S. of A. Texas Agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for Texas Ag Today. Be sure to follow the Texas Ag Today podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Texas farm and ranch news, check out our website at texasfarmbureau.org or tfbradio.com. Texas Ag Today is a production of the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.